You have to create psychologically safe spaces for people to be able to try new things. That's it. Bottom line, if that's not there, they're still going to care, but you're not going to get their best because you haven't created the conditions for it for them. And if we want that for our students, which is what we want for our students, we damn well better be modeling it for our teachers.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Craig Randall, author of Trust-Based Observations. Craig, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thanks for having me on, Annalise. I'm thrilled to be here.
Excellent. Super excited about this conversation. Let's set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. Trust-Based Observations, Maximizing Teaching and Learning Growth, is a schema-changing evaluation model that understands people perform at their best when they feel safe and supported. It begins with 12 20-minute observations per week, followed by collegial conversations driven by reflective questions, sharing observed teaching strengths, and the building of safe and trusted relationships with teachers. Add the elimination of rating pedagogical skills and replace it with rating mindset, and teachers will trust. Craig believes when teachers fully embrace risk-taking and innovation, it leads to remarkable teaching, transformations, and improved student learning. And I agree 100%. So, Craig, as we get started here, I really want to dig into the backside of your work. You were a teacher. You were in a classroom. You struggled with the whole traditional way that we evaluate teachers, or that we are trying to sort of help improve pedagogical aims. It's frustrating. I've talked to so many teachers that are frustrated by those experiences. So talk with us a little bit about the why of doing this work.
I definitely will. Hey, just one little thing. We've had a modification just from what you said originally. We used to say 12 times a week, and now we say 3 to 4 times a month. So
perfect.
Just a little thing, but that might not scare people off as much. So
I kind of would agree with that. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, my career is eclectic. I started out as a school counselor. I moved into college basketball coaching, and then I ended up at an international school teaching PE and health. And when I was there, and of course I taught along the way in the other roles too, but I had at first a really great principal, and she would do observation, do them well because she was great, but you would put on, I want to say show, that almost came in automatically, but you do put in a little extra when you know you're being observed. That's just natural. And then you'd get your feedback. And then if you're lucky, you'd have one more during the year, and then nothing about the first one would come up. It was like a completely separate observation. So like, where's the through line? You'd said work on these things, but now we're not even talking about these things. And like, you're thinking, well, should I bring it up? But then you're like, what, they weren't even looking for that. And so it just felt like something was missing. And I remember talking to other people about it, and they would, a good buddy in particular that was doing his, I was doing my principal certification while I was doing this, even wondering why I was doing it when I didn't like this part of it. And I was in a stretch of not being observed 2 straight years as well. And I would complain, and people would just say, well, sure, but what are you going to do? It's just the way it is. And I felt frustrated. And then really my first day in my supervision class, it all changed. And my mentor, Warren Aller, he just said, you have to be in classes every day. You have to be supporting teachers, helping them grow. You have to be asking them what they were doing to help students learn, what they might do differently. You have to really focus on and build them from their strengths. And he said, you just have to work on building relationships with them so they'll try things. And that's how you get better. And it was like the hallelujah music and the light bulb all at once going off for me. And that really started everything changing.
Yeah. And you know, it's really interesting because when you meet an educator and the first thing they want to tell you after they talk to you about their students is not about themselves, but about their administrators and the support that they get, right, from those building level leaders who are in the trenches with them, that's exactly what they will tell you. And it's about the relationship is really what they're trying to share with you. It's powerful, but it's a really, really tough space. So let's talk a little bit about sort of what you've learned along the way as you've sort of structured a training and a program and a protocol for helping folks really rethink this entire dynamic, because it's a power dynamic at its most basic, but it's much more than that.
I mean, there is hierarchy involved in it for sure, whether we want to imagine that or not. And when we do it the way we traditionally do it, like, your job's on the line with it. I mean, so I think let's just start out by saying, let's talk. Research shows the way we've been doing it doesn't work. Two major studies show it doesn't work. I don't think we need to dig into that, but I'll just say, no improvement was what it shows. It shows also that having one tool, one observation template, try and observe for growth and support for evaluation doesn't work. It shows that when we put that rating of pedagogy in the process, it diminishes trust between observer and observee, which causes teachers to play it safe and not take risks. So we basically have taken rating pedagogy out of it, and we've done what matters, building trust, working to build trust so teachers feel safe, so they know they can try something new, have what they're new trying be a disaster, and know they're going to be praised for taking that risk. And really, that's the core of what it's about. And look, people will say, and I'll read things on social media all the time about trust, quotes, relationship, quotes. And on one hand, I'm like applauding, yeah, yeah, yeah. And on the other hand, I'm like, yeah, but those are just words. They don't mean anything. And it's the how that you need to be able to go out about and build trust. And we really think that's what we do. It's a system that really is a three-part system. Part one are these observations with a manageable form without ratings, 20 minutes, unannounced. Teachers prefer they're unannounced because they don't have to put on a dog and pony show. And when they realize it's strengths-based and their bucket is going to be filled with things that we saw that are good, they actually like it and they don't worry about it. They prefer it that way. And we work to build trust with the teachers. Like Brené Brown talks about something that I think is really relevant. Do you mind if I jump into that real quick?
Yeah, feel free, please.
She talks about the connection between vulnerability, trust, and risk-taking. She says when vulnerability is too high, people are afraid to take risks. So our job then is to lower vulnerability so people feel comfortable taking risks. She says the way we do that is by building trust. And she has a great metaphor that we use all the time. She says, imagine a jar, and each consistent positive action you take is putting a marble in a jar. Well, trust isn't built with one marble in the jar or 10. It takes a while to build trust. And so we go in and we do these observations, and we have very specific actions that we take that we think are marbles. One, all the different strengths that we share are marbles. Two, we have the conversation like a marble is in your room instead of my office, because no one feels comfortable having a conversation in the principal's office. It doesn't matter whether you're 7 or 17 or 37. No one likes
it. Go to them. Don't ask them to come to you.
No. Tell me you haven't had a time in your career where your principal called you to your office and you went, oh.
Yeah.
When we get to the room, we ask permission. We sit beside you, not across from you, because that matters. You feel more comfortable. And we tell them that goal. And we start to, not by telling, we start by asking questions. And we think by starting by asking questions, I'm immediately changing the format. And I'm saying, I value you as a professional. What you have to say matters to me. So we ask, what were you doing to help the students learn? And but even then we build in trust by saying, look, we want to hear about the 20 minutes, but we know sometimes you'll think, oh, you just missed the best part.
Yeah. So tell me about that best part of that day, right? Yeah.
No, because they'll be so relieved because sometimes you will see a lecture part of it and they'll feel bad. And then we'll ask, what might you have done differently? And we say, look, if you feel like you nailed it, tell us that too. I don't want you to manufacture an answer. And sometimes they do nail it. I mean, I see 20 minutes of brilliance all the time. And then we just start sharing everything on the form. And as we do it, it's much trust, 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 trust. And so we don't offer suggestions right away either because that trust isn't there. There's exceptions for egregious behavior or new teachers that are really, really struggling. But we wait. And then even then, like, look, Hattie calls trust-based observations, and I'm so grateful, collective teacher efficacy in action. It's the highest form of effect size that we have, is that. And we really think three parts go into it. One is the observation, just the observations and reflective conversations with 9 core areas of pedagogy on it. But part two is the way we offer suggestions. And I do want to dig into this a little bit. If we think about the way we generally as administrators offer suggestions, it's like, hey, Annalise, I'd really like you to work on that working memory. I'd like to start adding reflection processing activities into your practice, okay? Super. Or, oh, and here's an article. But we would never to a third grader say, hey, Annalise, those times tables, they need a little work, okay? So get on that. Or, oh, and here's a multiplication facts sheet. I'll see you in a month. And so we want to make sure that we're modeling what we would want teachers to do to students. And it has to be about support. So what we're going to do is first, at the end of that visit, that we're ready to offer a suggestion. And my lens is always, which one of those 9 areas is going to have the biggest impact on improved teaching and learning? And I do want to say something about that, is that, look, teachers can come up like in a traditional coaching model with areas that they want to work on, and you maybe want to try and guide them into an area. But we all have blind spots too. And sometimes there's somebody outside can do that. And I'll just tell you as example for me, every week I train a school on trust-based observations, somebody will offer a suggestion where I'll think, oh, that's great. And so I'm the guy that developed this thing, and I have so many blind spots that every week somebody can do it. And so we're always, that's our lens. But the first thing we're going to do is we're going to ask permission to offer suggestions. So we're going to say, hey, Annalise, I have a suggestion on working memory, especially the reflection and processing activities. Would you like to hear? And that's an enormous difference between telling you I'd like to work on it and asking if you'd like to. You're going to say yes, but the psychological shift is between strategic compliance and really, I want to do this with you. But then, like, one of the cool things about our observation form is that it actually has PD links in each one of the 9 areas. So there's actionable articles. So I'll have pulled one out on those reflection and processing activities. And I'm going to say, Annalise, this is 75 different ones in this one article. Here's a highlighter. Pick like 6 or 8 that you think work for your kids. Great. Look, I don't want to start big. Let's just start with one of your preps. Which one do you want to do? Okay, let's do that. Let's pull up tomorrow's lesson. So you're working with high schoolers. Their cognitive load capacity is 10 minutes. Where do you think the first natural stop right around in that time period is where we can add that little reflection processing? Oh, right there. Which one of those ones you highlighted you want to do? Then we work our way all the way through it. And then we add choice again. And we just say, look, let's do this tomorrow. There's 3 ways we can do it. I can model it for you. We can co-teach, or you can teach and I can give you feedback either in the moment or wait. And we just let them choose. They usually choose one of the second two. And then we go and we watch them. And then we have another conversation and we say, what went well with those reflection processing activities? What would you like to keep working on with those reflection processing activities? And then we think this is the most important question. What can I do to support you? So by the next time I see you, you built that fully into all of your practice. And so in the form of a question, I really laid out the expectation and I'm happy to give more support, but really I've already given you the support. And that's where the dial moves. And that's where we really see teaching and learning improve because it's really supported in terms of what we do. And the third piece is because we're in classes so much, we really start to know who's best at what. So at the end of our first year, we tap into those in-house leaders and we say, we'd love you to lead monthly PD in whichever one of those areas of pedagogy we have. And the goal is to build whoever signs up for your group towards mastery. And we have a list of what mastery is. And then at the beginning of the year, we have a self-assessment rubric that teachers can use for those areas of pedagogy to choose which one they want to be in. And choice is important with professional development. That's been one of the complaints about it, as has one-offs and not continuing PD, right?
Right.
And so we provide you a year to get better in it, and we let you choose that area. So you get to work on it. And then on the form, we have an additional question we ask the second year, which is a little accountability question, which is, talk to me about your progress on that area of pedagogy. And so then you're working towards mastery in that area too. And then so over time, we're really, really in a truly supported way, building you up for collective teacher efficacy. I actually have a nice little recent story about that. Would you like to hear?
I would love to hear it. Yes.
So we were at a school in my home state, and there was this really impressive young teacher. And we thought, like, with what he was doing with like the cooperative learning on this novel wasn't quite there, and it wasn't quite everyone equally engaged. And so the instructional coach worked with him and offered a suggestion and did that part that I just told you. And then we went and watched him, and it was amazing the way he introduced it to build success. And the kids were all 100% engaged. We left at recess, and we met with him later in the day, and he said, oh, I have to tell you, when we came back from the recess, the kids said, can we keep doing this? So that's already a victory. And I have a podcast like you where I interview teachers that are really, really strong that I see when I'm training. And so I had him on that. And this is the best part. He said, Craig, the next Tuesday after that, we had our grade level meeting. And I showed my whole team how to do it and walked them through it. And now the whole team's doing it. Well, what is that? That's collective teacher efficacy in action.
Absolutely.
And when teachers are working on their PD together, what's that? That's collective teacher efficacy in action. But why are those all working? Because we've already built the trust through the observation and reflective conversation piece. That's really the core of what we do.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty remarkable. An awesome opportunity for everybody who has the chance to participate. I do want to dig in a little bit on the topic around risk, right? Because it can be a big deal. And in the current environment that we are collectively trying to teach in, and where we have the expectation of learning to be happening, and not just in the US, but really on a global scale, we're seeing a lot of churning happening in the field of education. Right now, risk is bigger in some ways than it's ever been before. So I'm curious about how you will help a reluctant administrator or a reluctant group of teachers that are just like, you know, in our district or in our system, what you're talking about is not even feasible, much less possible. So share that sort of thinking around with us.
It's good thinking. And look, if we're talking on paths to changes, there's really 5 stages. There's innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, and laggards. And I always say I never want laggards to do trust-based observations.
I'm laughing. I'm going to let you pause there, Craig. Here's the reason I'm laughing. So my listeners have heard me say, we call this the 3 rings of Dante. You know, the hell yeses, the what the hells, and the hell knows. Right. You know, I appreciate that you've broken it out a little more than that, but I'm laughing because I think everybody that is in the work of this transformative educational change, we have a similar thinking about the things that we encounter.
Look, I think there's long term and short term. To be honest with you, most of the people we're training right now, they're the early adopters and the innovators. But we're starting to get some early majorities, because when I come to a big school, of course, not everyone's totally gung-ho at the beginning, but they do buy in. Like last week, I was training a school in Seoul, because we do this all over the world in Korea. And 3 of the people were new to the school, and they hadn't encountered this before, and they were reluctant. And on Friday afternoon, one of them said, all right, you converted me, you won. And I mean, it was tongue-in-cheek. But then another one said, oh my gosh, he said, like, I could never go back to doing it the other way anymore, because this one's so better. And both of them said, I feel so bad for the way I did it before. And I just said, but you know better, do better. You can't do that. And then the third guy just said, not only that, but now I'm a proselytizer. So it changes people that quickly. It really, really does. But getting them on board is the issue. So long term, we need to get laws changed in the US. And I'm working in my home state. Damn, it's hard. It's obviously teacher friendly, so the union's coming on board on it, but man, it's hard. So long term, we think if we get one state, we'll get more states to follow. But if you're in a public school, that because a race to the top, you've got legislation tied to stricter teacher evaluation laws, it's tough. In my home state of Washington, you are required to do Danielson-Marzano or the University of Washington model. So what we do and suggest in these situations, and we work with you, is we find ways, look, these models don't work, and rating pedagogy is bad. It works exactly against what you want to do. You can't work them full conjunction together. Because I can do my best TBO stuff, but if I'm rating you every time too, it's going to undermine everything we're doing. I'm just going to call that out right now. Yet, there are ways to make it work. So we worked with two districts in Washington, which has been hard to get districts in my home state. And so they both are required to, they chose, their district is doing Danielson. So usually you're on comprehensive, and I always forget the other word, but 4 out of 5 years, you get to choose which one of the areas you want, your growth or whatever. Yeah. And then at the fifth year is your comprehensive year where it's the full one. And so what these districts have done is on Danielson, I think 4-8 is professionalism. So they said, you know what? If you're not in comprehensive, we're just going to put you all in professionalism, which is non-pedagogical. And that's the problem is rating pedagogy. So we've taken that part out of it for them. And so that's how they make it work for them. Like with first year teachers, you still, hey, look, you have to play the game and you just say, this is what we want to do, but I have to do that. And so really what that's saying is roughly around 20% of my teachers every year are on the comprehensive. And so they'll just say, look, this is what we have to do this year. We need to be compliant with that. And some will do it different ways. Some will say, look, let's just talk together about what your ratings are, because they know it doesn't even matter really, because ratings don't affect growth. That's what the research says. Some will just say, okay, I'll be your TBO observer, but somebody else will do your official, so we don't have to cross paths that way. And so we just find ways to make it work that way legally. If we're talking about teachers, though, and reluctant teachers.
I'm talking about risk aversion, which I think is different. I just want to push back. It's different reluctancy.
Okay, thank you. I agree. And I will say this, is that what we find, because we're strengths-based, like we're always pointing out the strength. It's so, so powerful. And starting by asking those questions, we will see semi-regularly tears of joy because people aren't used to having their strengths shared with them, which is an indictment of the other systems more than praise for TBO. But it also speaks to the power of strength, working from strengths. Like the clinical model that came out of Harvard in the late 60s, pre-observation, observation, post-observation, they said build from strengths. Like 56 years ago. So I don't know what happened along the way. What we find,
I have some theories. Oh my, yes.
But here's what I'll say. When we do this, teachers that are risk averse will all of a sudden change and they become more fixed mindset or whatever, and they become growth mindset. Actually, a story just popped into my head. This is perfect. Okay. And so they'll take those risks. So we were at a school in the UK. We had a amazing head teacher who had followed two insanely toxic head teachers that spoke to teachers in ways that I can't even say on this because I'd probably, you know, you'd probably kick me off for the language they used. And so she's so excited. And this is during COVID. And so they'd had 2 years without any. And so they felt a reprieve. These horrible heads, they get this great one. There's no observations. She tells them the week before, trust-based observations. Usually the word trust is all you need to have people feel fine. She emails me frantically, saying, Craig, this isn't going to work. My teachers are freaking out. I'm like, it's all going to be fine. She's like, okay, but you have to talk to them on Monday. We don't normally do that. And I said, sure. And so I talked to the teachers. I told them about trust-based observations. And I said, look, the goal is for all of us to build enough trust so any of us can come in, observe you, see you trying something new, have it be a train wreck. And yet, as opposed to a traditional observation where you're freaking out, you won't, because you know the next day I'm going to say, I love it. You were taking a risk. High five. And so we, on Wednesday of that week, we observed the teacher that by her own admission and by everyone on the teams was the most risk averse teacher. Ahead of our training, they had done cooperative learning training because that's one of the areas on our form. She said in the conversation after we observed her, because she went and tried some, she said, you know, I never even would have added that to my class, just period, let alone during an observation. She said, but I heard what you said Monday and I thought, all right, I'm going to do it. And she did great. And when we finish, we always say to the teachers, ask the teachers, hey, now that you've had a round of trust-based observations, what do you think? And she said, one, it just feels so nice to have what you do be noticed. And she said, and we just want to be heard and appreciated. But here's the best part. The next morning, the school leader that observed her said, "I have to tell you what happened yesterday. At the end of the day, I was walking out the same time as that teacher. And she walked up to me and she said, 'I want you to know that today meant more to me than you'll ever know,' and gave her a big hug."
Aww.
So risk averse and risk averse no longer. It just changes you because you feel psychologically safe because we focus on strengths and building trust instead of when we rate, it creates a deficit mindset in us and we see what's wrong. When I start to look at strengths, I start to see you all in a different way and they feel it and it changes.
Absolutely. And it's that support mechanism that is built into the work that you're doing that I think that's a great example, right? Because when that teacher got to experience support, it made it really, really easy to translate that feeling of I'm being supported in this moment to now I can trust in a process to move me forward.
And that was just her first visit, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Before the jar was full of marbles.
So Craig, tell me, you know, so you've been in this journey for a while. This process is clearly working. It's having a positive impact, not just on teachers, but on the learners those teachers are engaged with day to day. So what right now keeps you up at night? Like, what's the next piece? I mean, the educational system, as we've lived it for the last 100 years or so, fortunately, is really unraveling. I'm thrilled about that in many ways, right? But we have a lot of work to do. So what keeps you up at night? What are you thinking about in your work moving forward?
I mean, it relates to the same thing in a way. Change is hard. And people are reluctant to change. And I mean, Danielson, Marzano, bless them, they're all well-intended, but it's been around for 25 years. So how old do you have to be to have really experienced anything else? And not that whatever else before that was really great either. And so like what gives me anxiety is that I'm just going to be this niche little boutique observation guy that it works and everybody that does it knows it works. And I'm not going to be able to overcome the government restrictions or whatever. Like people with, I think, business mindsets sometimes drive this thinking more rigor is the way. And it's not. We don't think like that as teachers. If we did, we wouldn't have gotten to teaching. We didn't get into it to make money, obviously. And so thinking like that and that it's going to be so hard to get people to understand, no, we're different. Let's stop it. Let's change these rules. Let's change these laws. Let's let us try something else like that. Oh, it gives me way more anxiety than it should.
But those are the right things to be thinking about, right? Because it is really deep, meaningful, but super hard work, right? And one of the things that we talk about frequently on Learning Unboxed is just celebrating those educators that are out there, you know, rolling up their sleeves and doing the work for the benefit of their learners. And those educators find joy in what they're doing, right? And that's the reason most people who went into teaching, they went there because they love learning. They love to learn themselves, right? And so to be able to share that joy with their students and with their colleagues is really, really important. And yet we get stuck sometimes in the system in which we're operating and forget about the reason that we were there to begin with.
Amen, 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 amen. Look, we got into teaching because we want to make a difference in the lives of young people. And you have to create psychologically safe spaces for people to be able to try new things. That's it. Bottom line, if that's not there, they're still going to care, but you're not going to get their best because you haven't created the conditions for it for them. And if we want that for our students, which is what we want for our students, we damn well better be modeling it for our teachers.
Right. So one thing we didn't touch on, and I'm really curious, it's not necessarily in the wheelhouse of the specific work, but I have no doubt that on your journey, you think about this. So the other reality here is that we are not preparing teachers for the new paradigm that is teaching and learning, right? We're not preparing them in the ways that they need to be prepared. Our teacher prep programs, I guess to sort of step back, our teacher prep programs largely have not evolved either.
Yep.
And certainly our graduate programs that are helping teachers transition from being classroom teachers to being administrators, I mean, we're just teaching them the same old processes that are the problem. So what do you think about that piece of this? Where's space in that system for the work that you're doing? Because it would seem to me, right, that this works so well, it's so incredibly effective at changing that paradigm, it's changing the relationship and the dynamic, right, of this process, then it needs to be foundational, and it's not.
My wife's a new teacher mentor, and she'll tell you it varies from school to school where they come from. And you'll see schools that are stronger at it. I think overall, we're not strong at doing classroom management. But we've had some schools start to, that we've worked with their new teachers, suggest that they use our template of the 9 careers of pedagogy as their planning template for teachers, for new teachers. And so that's an idea. We're actually just starting to like try to push into getting TBO, trust-based observations, for the observers that are working for pre-service teachers. So they start observing them that way, in that non-judgmental way as well. You know, and it's just starting that. And then I think, I just had a university reach out to me and say they want to build this into the core of their graduate school leadership program. So, I mean, we start small and it's like, for me, I have a mission in life. Like, I'll be 60 at the end of the week, and I won't retire because I can't, because this is what we have to do to try and change it. So I just think whatever we're doing, we just have to persist, and we have to create conditions so people can feel safe trying new things, whether it's this or anything else in a different field of anything. It's just, you just go and do what you can, and hopefully you cross that tipping point where it becomes the new norm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Craig, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your day to chat with all of us on Learning Unboxed. And for our listeners, we will also put this in the show notes. But if you want more information, if you want to reach out, go to trustbased.com, where you will be able to get a lot of information and follow up directly with Craig. So we're really excited about this conversation, and I hope that you all take it to heart. But Craig, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Elise. I enjoyed the chat.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.